You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of August 8th, 2017, and episode number 325. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, the doctor is in. And this week's news, we're going to talk a little bit, actually we're going to talk a lot, about the Chicago Phantom reports. There's five more stories this week. Incredible. And including a late-breaking story that we'll cover in a little bit of detail. We're also going to talk about a chupacabra skull that was discovered in Nevada. Sasquatch has been released from prison. That's right. Yeah, I bet you didn't know he's been in prison for a couple of years. And we're going to go fishing for ghosts in Texas. And we're going to reveal right here the truth about... You ready? Okay. Just seeing if you're ready. The truth about crop circles will be revealed tonight. How they form. It's pretty miraculous. You'll really enjoy that. Plus, we'll also have the book of the week. And it's probably all I'm going to have time for, to be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff to cover tonight. A lot of stories. Might not seem like much, but when we get into this, my goodness. It's funny because the week starts out really slow, and then all of a sudden, I look back and there's just a pile of stories. And then right before I come on the show, about 45 minutes ago, another Chicago Phantom story pops up. So we'll talk about all that, well, right now. And this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. You can visit the International Cryptozoology Museum now at 4 Thompson's Point Road, Suite 106. And it's big. It's bigger than it's ever been. And for more information on the International Cryptozoology Museum, gotta slow down here, visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And one big thing with the International Cryptozoology Museum is the International Cryptozoology Conference 2017, also known as ICC-17, presented by the International Cryptozoology Society, and it's going to be held up in Portland, Maine. It was held in down there in Florida a year ago, January, but this year, Portland, Maine, on Labor Day weekend, and specifically on Sunday, September 3rd, at the Clarion Hotel. Now, more information about the museum itself, as well as the conference, you can go to cryptozoologymuseum.com. Or about the actual conference, you can go to cryptozoonews.com. So cryptozoonews.com/ICC-17. Wish I could go to that. So many things to go to. Only so much time to do anything. And speaking of going to places, last weekend I was at the Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And I was tired. Slept almost all day Sunday. And now this was the fifth year of the event. And I didn't really know the history of the event too much prior to last year, which I was a speaker there last year as well. I talked about just basic paranormal things that occur in Pennsylvania and kind of how to investigate the big three, UFOs, ghosts, and cryptids, I guess, essentially. But I didn't know really too much about it. And I guess it started out at a bar. which is kind of cool. It would have been neat to have it in the bar this year. I could have used a couple of drinks, actually. Well, this was an interesting and diverse lineup of speakers this year that talked about all strange things, every topic you could think of, weather anomalies, biblical conspiracies, UFOs, ghosts, and cryptozoology. Now, after the prior weekend at Kecksburg, I kept hearing people talking about Black Panther sightings. Stan Gordon covered quite a few of them. Ron Murphy had talked about some. Colin even mentioned it. So I was like, you know, this is an interesting topic, and I kind of want to step away from just doing these basic things and dive into a specific topic. So I designed from scratch a brand new presentation, essentially in 4 days. I was listening to Colin's show on Monday night, and I was actually working on the presentation at the same time. Got it done, and it went over pretty well, and also created a table display with some pictures and background information on big cats all over the world, and it looked pretty good. It was all laminated. Thanks to my wife, she went out and laminated all the stuff for me and got everything ready and painted up my board that I had for the countries of the world with the tigers and lions and bears and all that. Well, not bears, but all the other cats all over the globe, where they were at, where they were located. And yeah, I mentioned Colin Schneider. He was also speaking at the event. He was a little later on in the day. Well, we were neighbors, of course. I kind of had to do some finagling of luckily I was the first person there, the first speaker there, and move some tables around, and we ended up being neighbors. And I'll tell you what, it was an interesting event, especially since it went out of the normal confines of paranormal topics. You get a little worried when you get the conspiracy theory topics, and especially when people are talking about religion. It was a little hairy with that a little bit, not going to lie. But it was still interesting, and it brought a little bit of a different crowd for those two speakers that were there. But a good chunk of the people that were there were talking about paranormal topics. Stan Gordon, myself, Colin Schneider, there was a ghost group there as well that capped off the night. And let's see, hopefully if we get a little time tonight, I want to give a brief synopsis of my presentation to kind of clear the air on what Black Panthers are and the stories behind them and some of the validity to it, because it's a little bit of misnomer, and it is paranormal, believe it or not. And one last thing I want to talk about, I don't want to take up too much time talking about this. It was a great event, and I had a lot of fun. But one thing to me really stood out above all the great speakers that were there and all the great information. And even the we had a kind of we're talking about what to do next year already. Yeah, imagine that. That's kind of when you start planning a convention, is right at the end of the convention you're at, I guess. And we're talking about doing a panel discussion and bringing all the speakers up. And little did I know, since there was a cancellation, that we had time to do a panel. And we all had questions. It was a little intense, but it was exciting. And it's always neat to be challenged from the crowd and have that live Q&A stuff. So that was fun. But besides that, there was I noticed a banner for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I thought, well, you know, maybe they're there to just to gather donations. They were back there right next to Stan Gordon and right next to where the food line was. Perfect place for them, for people who are going to have money in hand right there. But I noticed that Aaron Dunbar was in attendance. If you've never heard of Aaron Dunbar, he gained a little bit of attention back in 2015 when he published the novel A Wish for Giants. And I heard of it, and I really never dug into it, never really researched it. I just had read a little blurb about it. And it's really interesting. And he came up and he talked about it. So I spent 15 minutes early in the morning talking about the book and a project associated with the book. And essentially the story is a little girl has an inoperable brain tumor, and she makes a wish through Make-A-Wish to see Bigfoot. And I learned at the event that he's actually been filming a movie version of this book, which has gained the attention of a lot of people in the Bigfoot field. And right now it's in post-production, on the post-production phase, and it should be out sometime next year. It's probably going to obviously just be DVD. It's not going to be in the theaters or anything like that. Maybe in Pennsylvania in different parts. I'm not sure yet. We were treated to a sneak peek of the movie through an extended preview. And of course, I bought the book, finally bought the book. And partial proceeds of the book goes to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the locations in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. And hopefully, my gosh, I have a pile of books. I had to stay up late the last couple nights to finish the book for tonight, which is probably one of my favorite books I've read in a long time. But yeah, it's on the list, and I'm going to hopefully get through it pretty soon and talk about this really interesting way to write a book and get the attention of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, which really does a very special thing. That's really kind of a tough topic to talk about, but great thing that he was there, and I was glad to pick up the book, and I just really wanted to mention that real quick. And as mentioning books here, if you don't know about this, my latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, is now available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and probably a few other places out there. But you can buy it through paranewsinsider.com. On the front page, you can click where I talk about my six books and click on that link. It'll take you right to that. And one other thing real quick. What I mentioned, the Goose Project version 2.0 MS fundraiser paranormal convention is coming up fast. August 19th, it's at the Bell Nursing Home in Kimballton, Ohio. And if you want more information about that, I'm going to hopefully have time next week to talk about that. I'm going to clear the schedule a little bit. I'll talk about that next week. You can go to thegooseproject.com. And that's THEGOOZ project dot for you. If you don't know how to spell project, sorry about your luck. And I'll post that link there in the chat room so you guys can look at that information about this really interesting event as well. It's going to be mostly ghost people. So I'm going to be doing cryptozoology. Not sure exactly what the topic is. I like to fly by the seat of my pants. It's the best way to fly. So August 19th, the Goose Project fundraiser. It's for multiple sclerosis. So it's another one of those ones that's for charitable stuff. And one thing I want to mention real quick before getting into the actual news is a little segment that I really don't utilize as much because I like to dig into detail into the stories I talk about. But one little thing here in a section that I call baffling briefs, because everybody's baffled about certain stories in the paranormal. And these are just brief stories. This one I really haven't done a whole lot of research on. I have an idea, but I can't find the information I'm looking for. And somebody had asked me, what do I think about the YouTube video that's titled Chinese Nessie Filmed Emerging from Lake? Well, I could give you a one-word answer or maybe a two-word answer or a one-word with a hyphen in the middle. But if you haven't seen this, Chinese Nessie Filmed Emerging from Lake, you just search for that. Search for that anywhere. It doesn't even have to be YouTube. You just Google that, and sure, the video will pop up as well as probably about 10 stories at this point. Now, the publisher of that is the Hidden Underbelly 2.0. And Hidden Underbelly was a channel that did all kinds of conspiracy theory based stories and a lot of hoaxed stuff. So right there, as soon as I saw that associated with it, I really didn't hold that in very high regard. Now, one of the major issues, if you watch the video, there's a website embedded into the top of the entire video. Now, if you follow that link, it leads to a computer and video game screen recording software company, and I'm not going to mention it because I'm not going to hand them free publicity, but I thought that was a little strange. So it is essentially a money grab with the video, but in the actual video, if you watch it, it's you don't really see anything. There's no monster or creature. It's just a thing of water, and it's been said that it looks like something is just floating in the water, or somebody had thrown something in there and was filming it. Something probably sank to the bottom and it came back up. So it's a real short video. There's no prelude to it or anything. It's just boom, there you go. And the other just really irritating thing about it that I can tell you is not right with it is the audio. The audio sounds like a bunch of people screaming or carrying on or oohing and aahing here, but that's not real. It's added. It's a track that's added to that video because you could tell the sound. The people are in front of the camera or at the sides of the camera, but you're looking out over water, and these people are not there. And I know I've heard the sound before, and that's why I really haven't busted this one. But if I can find that video with the audio, boom, I'm gonna blow it apart. Well, I actually have a link here, so I'll throw that if you guys want a quick little laugh. Poof. Yeah, I'm not too sold on this thing. It's just it's pretty much like a laugh track. Something just added in on top of the video, and you see a lot of that, and people are pretty careless with stuff like that, and it's usually a dead giveaway. And if you can pretty much disprove part of that, then the whole video essentially gets flushed down the toilet. Not a good segue for cryptid news, talking about things getting flushed down the toilet, but cryptid news. The Chicago Phantom. Yes, I mentioned a bunch of stories. I'm not going to go overly into detail because there's so many stories and we have a lot to cover. But the Chicago Phantom, flying humanoid, bat owl, mothman, whatever you want to call it, I'm fine. I don't have a trademark name for it. I use Chicago Phantom because that's what Lon Strickler has been calling it and really covering things through his Phantoms and Monsters website. It's where I'm getting pretty much all of my information about this story, as well as through Facebook. And he kind of tips me off when stuff is getting published. So I'm in the know with stuff and trying to get you this stuff, especially if something happens like it did today, so I could talk about it with you guys. This one was turned in to Lon Strickler back on August 2nd. And the actual sighting was from August of 2016, so it's not current. And the witness named Tony states that he saw something out of the corner of his eye while in the Cicero area of Chicago. He had an eerie feeling and finally saw a large creature perched on top of a streetlight. We've heard that before. That had a head that came to a point and large red eyes. Now, Tony works in security in clubs in the area. We heard that one before, too. And is purportedly well-known. And we've also heard that before. These last details are, again, odd because securities, bouncers, as well as clubs and bars, not to mention sitting perched on top of a streetlight. We've heard that all before in these stories. Mentioned a couple of times. Interesting. Interesting, interesting. And again, another crowded area. I didn't really say what time this happened, but it's weird. And it's finally the first documented sighting that does not take place in 2011 or 2017. And I'll throw that in the chat room. Not a whole lot to it, but it's interesting nonetheless. Cicero, yeah, I know. I saw that in a news thing when I watched it. Second story here, another report floated into Lon Strickler, again, of phantomsandmonsters.com on Thursday, August 3rd. This one occurred at a playground in Bolingbrook, Illinois. Hopefully I pronounced that one correct, where a woman was walking at around 10:30 p.m., which is weird. 10:30 p.m. is like the Chicago Phantom hour. She noticed something standing in the path that was about 7 to 8 feet tall. She states she felt drawn to the creature, weird, and pulled out her cell phone to photograph it while about 15 feet away. And she stated the creature turned toward her, and then she kind of scampered off and went home. Once home, she told her son, who said they should drive back to the playground area. Great idea. Let's go check it out. I guess that's what I would do. He saw a shadow, but never saw the actual creature. And when he felt apprehension about being there, they took off. They went home. Wise choice. That's it. Boom. Painless. Second story. Third story this week with the Chicago Phantom involves the first actual visual evidence from a witness. This is critical. This is when things get serious. The woman stated she was coming out of a Best Buy store in Melrose Park on the outskirts of Chicago with her husband when they saw a large black bat flying overhead. Now, this was in the middle of the day. This wasn't at night. This wasn't early morning. This was right in smack dab in the middle of the afternoon. It came from over the store, so it came from behind them, essentially, from the west, and was heading east towards Chicago. And the witness stated it was only about 20 feet overhead, which can't be right because the store is actually about 35 to 40 feet from the pictures that I saw. Anyway, she tried to get her phone out of her purse to take a photograph, but by the time she did, it was too far away to get much detail. Who keeps a phone in their purse? Most women put it in their back pocket. Anyway, the report was turned into Manuel Navarrete and is detailed on the phantomsandmonsters.com website by Alon Strickler. And it really, it doesn't really look like much when you look at the picture. And I've seen that a lot of people have commented about this on different websites, Facebook posts and different things, and a lot of people feel that this is just an airplane. And it should be noted that this location is 4 miles from the Chicago O'Hare Airport. So 4 miles is pretty close. It's not really in the holding pattern range, but this would be on a in an area where planes would kind of circle into land. 4 miles out, you'd probably be able to tell it's an airplane. I mean, it's pretty close. And anybody that lives in that area would be very, very familiar with the air traffic. Certainly, as Chicago O'Hare is one of the more busier airports, not only in the country, but in the world. And one more thing that I looked at to see, sometimes people see strange airplanes they're not used to seeing. Somebody mentioned a C-130 aircraft, which is a very large propeller-driven aircraft that if you've never seen one in the air, they look a little weird. And I looked up the Chicago Air and Water Show, and this does not start until August 19th. And typically these aircraft come in, they come in a few days early, sometimes a week early, but I think it's a little bit too early to say that the Chicago Air and Water Show had anything to do with this. So it's doubtful that it's an unusual aircraft for the area. I know that doesn't really help. I like to do research on these stories and just kind of for myself so I feel better, so I could sleep at night. And I don't know what Dita's cheering about in the chat room. Well, if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out. A lot of antics, a lot of great people in there. A lot of insight, too, about what I'm talking about and correcting me when I say people's names and cities wrong, which is, that's fine. It's cool. Let's see. Story number 4. Last Saturday, another case was uploaded to the MUFON case management system, MUFON Mutual UFO Network. They do UFO stuff. Why are they getting Chicago Phantom stories? I don't know. This event took place on Friday early evening at around 5:30 p.m. local time. Anytime I talk about the time in any story, it's local time. But gotta talk about that. A mother and her 3 children were walking home from soccer practice when they spotted what they described as a large black bat flying over the practice fields of the Dominican University. The girls were a bit afraid and crying after their experience, and the witness said that the bat flew off in a southwestern direction. That's important because Friday is also the same day that the purported photograph of the bat was taken outside of the Best Buy store. And according to I'm getting ahead of myself. The creature was coming from the west and heading east in the photograph. Now, the incident near the Dominican University would have been pretty much exactly 2 miles. I think it was 2.07 miles that I measured on Google Earth. Not Google Earth. If you go to, the actual program, Google Earth, Google Earth Pro. I would recommend that if you're doing stuff like that. Just download that. Google on – when you Google in Google Maps, you really can't do stuff like that. It's very archaic. Anyway, according to Manuel Navarrete, the photograph and this latest case occurred within a half hour of each other. I don't know which one happened first. If I had that critical information, I could kind of piece this together and see exactly, kind of figure out based on the speed, figure out where this thing was. So maybe we could do some cold calls or find out if anybody else in the area had seen it. But it pretty much paints a picture of what happened that afternoon. I feel like Kolchak the Night Stalker. I want to go out there and investigate this, figure out what's going on. It's really interesting. And it's just strange. It's weird. I'm not sure what's going on. It's interesting. Okay. Boom. There's that story in the chat room. And last but not least, earlier today, another sighting was posted by Lon Strickler on phantomsandmonsters.com. This one occurred about 45 minutes northwest of Chicago, out in Elgin, Illinois. The witness described seeing a large flying being in the sky back on August 1st, around 11:45 a.m. The witness stated it was fairly high in the sky and was moving away from their vantage point. The witness did not see the creature flap its wings, so essentially call it a glider. The witness is also hopeful that the creature will once again pass over their where they work at a similar time, and they're taking their break around the same time every day in hopes of spotting the creature once again and hopefully getting a photograph of it. That's weird. That's just weird. Almost as weird as soccer practice in August. I don't know. I don't know. Around here, everyone, soccer's gone by like May or June. Anyway. Yeah. So all told right now, as what I know, unless something is popping up right this second, which I don't see any Facebook pushes right now on this. So safe to say right now that there are 33 sightings of the Chicago Phantom dating back to 2011. And there is a Google map created by Lon Strickler that has all of these sightings. And if you've seen the link before, you have access to the link. It's still the same link. He updates it as he gets new stories. So if you have that link, you're set. If not, I just posted it in the chat room again, so you can check that out. Look at the sightings. And in case you missed the announcement last Monday during the Crypto Kid radio show with host Colin Schneider, or have not seen this on social media, Lon Strickler and his fellow co-hosts Sean Forker, the Fork Chop, and Butch Witkowski are bringing Arcane Radio to WCJV, and it all starts on Thursday, September 7th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's going to be a two-hour show. So I don't know, I'm going to have to take a nap before that comes on. Really cool. Looking forward to that show. So again, Thursday nights, 10 p.m. right here on WCJVradio.com. And speaking of WCJVradio.com, you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. In case you didn't hear, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And in case you missed it, last night, Monday night, the Crypto Kid radio show hosted by Colin Schneider, he had Jonathan Downs, probably the best show he's done so far, I think. I mean, what I've heard, but that's good. They're getting better. The second time that Jonathan Downs has been on the show, and really interesting insight into some stuff, and it's cool that they were like good chums. They were good friends on the show, which is always easy to listen to when people are laughing and joking and kind of getting out of the context of the conversation and just being humans. And Jonathan Downs, he's the director for the Center for Fortean Zoology. Now next week, Tyler Houck, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Houck, we'll be discussing cryptids and cryptozoology. And again, Crypto Kid Radio, every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson as she talks with Bill Bean and Jeff Leeper on Spiritual Warriors. I'll bring my sword for that one. That's Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. And actually, if you need your cat fix, you can actually catch her tonight. Catch Kat Hobson tonight, Tuesday, August 8th, on The Mallard Report, 9 p.m. Eastern. You got an hour to decompress after this show. Then head on over to tmr247.net for The Mallard Report tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I saw him in the chat room. There he is. Ducky is live. And where are we? Well, you know what? We're still in cryptozoology news. Halfway through the show. Interesting thing. I saw this. Normally, probably not something I want to cover. But it was so funny, I have no choice. I had to talk about this. Big thanks to Benjamin Radford for pointing me in the for this next story. A man near Las Vegas, Nevada. Is that how you say it? Las Vegas? Some people say Las Vegas. I don't think that's right. Well, this guy, he might have won the big one. Martin McCosker, a treasure hunter, accidentally stumbled across what he feels is the genuine, real thing, real McCoy, the skull of a chupacabra. Ooh. Now, Martin said of his find, quote, "I couldn't think of anything else it could be. I mean, look at the teeth on the thing. They're huge," unquote. I don't know if he said it exactly like that, but I just kind of read it with a little bit of enthusiasm. Yes, the teeth are huge, but after a very quick search, didn't take me long, I might have found the skull that matches this creature perfectly. And Ben had mentioned a cat. It could be a cat. Well, while many mistake fox, coyote, and even dogs for chupacabra, it seems that Martin might have in his possession the first ever feline version of one. Yes, it looks exactly like the Felis catus, or what everyone else knows as a common house cat, buried in the yard. He found it by accident. I don't know what happened with that. But yeah, that's probably somebody's pet that died, and now you've just dug it up. And they're probably reading that story going, "Dude, that's Frisky. Why did you unbury Frisky? Bad memories. Put Mr. Frisky back in the ground." And let's see, I think this is it. Yeah, last story here in cryptozoology. I love when stories I've covered in the past come back around with more information. And I'll tell you what, this one goes way back. This story I last covered back on March 13th of 2015. That was way back, episode number 216. Wow. This incident took place in Oregon back in October of 2013, where Linus Norgren, who suffers from bipolar disorder and was 20 years old when the event occurred, suddenly appeared naked near the ATV of Jeff McDonald. Now, McDonald, who was 58 years old at the time, had been hunting with a rifle, and he's probably a little shocked to see some naked dude hanging out by his ATV. Now, they get into a little scuffle. Norgren managed to take away the rifle from McDonald, but he quickly dropped it, despite being smaller, scrawnier, and, well, of course, naked. During the trial in 2015, prosecutor Megan Johnson said that his intentions of violence toward McDonald were made clear when Norgren said, quote, "Sasquatch kills the hunter," unquote. And I'm sure it was a lot scarier than that. Norgren then attacked McDonald with a rock, hitting him in the head and knocking him down. Norgren then proceeded to tear at McDonald's arms, causing fractures and dislocations. The prosecutor described the scene as, quote, "He systematically and violently ripped Mr. McDonald's arms out of his torso," unquote. Wow. McDonald managed to hold off further attacks and eventually held Norgren down at gunpoint until police finally arrived. Norgren was found guilty of attempted murder and second-degree assault on March 6, 2015. His sentence of 10 years in prison was then handed down on March 10, 2015. Now, last Tuesday, the Oregon Court of Appeals overturned the ruling due to statements made during Norgren's arrest and the fact that he more than likely did not understand his Miranda rights. Norgren purportedly told police he was, quote, a Sasquatch from a family of Sasquatches, unquote. Sounds like he's been talking to Matt Moneymaker. The ruling stated, quote, the condition Norgren was found in, as well as the Sasquatch statement, were particularly significant to our conclusion that Norgren's waiver of his Miranda rights was not knowing and intelligent, unquote. So essentially, the lawyers got him off. Took him a little while through appeals. And, you know, he's been sent in jail for a couple of years, I guess. I guess it's not right. Somebody who has a disorder like that probably shouldn't be serving time as somebody who knowingly, willingly committed some kind of really animalistic attack on another human being. But 2 years, that's a long time. And hopefully he gets, A, he gets help, and B, he gets medication, and C, he takes advantage of both. Because I really don't want to read another story about somebody dismembering somebody else in the forest thinking that they're a Sasquatch. Spooky stuff. And again, that's, you know, that's from 2013. So it's 4 years, all this stuff has been going on. And now he's a free Squatch, free to roam the woods. Pretty scary. There's a link in the chat room, and we're going to move ahead to ghost news. Oh no. Here, this is, I don't know. I usually have a favorite story every week. This week, I don't really have a favorite story. This story I probably spent the most time on researching, watching, analyzing, kind of reading and gauging everyone else's, kind of reaction to this. And you've more than likely seen this. You already know where I'm going to talk about it. Ghost news, the biggest story in ghost news. I mean, did you really fall for it? Did you really think it was real? Come on, really? You thought that thing was real? The Texas Hotel Poltergeist video. That's what I'm talking about. And I'm sure a lot of people, I've seen this for years, that people, they go to extremes about things. They either go, that's fake. Can't be real. It's got to be fake. Or they go to the other extreme. Wow, that's the real deal. Wow, a real poltergeist on film. Wow, it's real. But there's not a whole lot of critical evaluation. It's kind of hard to come by sometimes. And just evaluate it. Let the evidence, let the information speak for itself. And usually it will speak loud and clear. And, you know, I always say the truth is usually in the middle, but not always dead center. Sometimes it's a little closer to one extreme or the other. And in this case, despite the vicious claims by Frank Ramirez, that the person behind the video, that's Frank Ramirez, it does appear to be a staged event. He claims it's real. He claims this has happened. He claims he's not lying. But, I mean, everything points to this. And despite the majority of people seemingly calling him out on the many obvious things within the video, Ramirez has stayed strong in his claim that everything in the video was real and he did not stage anything. He's very adamant about this. Now, we could go scene to scene with the phone and the towel and all that. I mean, the phone had to be real, right? It wasn't even plugged in. That makes it real, right? Because it wasn't plugged in. I have no idea what that meant. Yeah. And if you've seen the analysis by Kenny Biddle, Kenny is a skeptic, pretty much a skeptic, lives in Pennsylvania. Good guy. Very, very knowledgeable. I agree with his analysis. Where the phone moved a second time, if you've seen the video, it moves a second time. It's pretty obvious it's attached to something as the coiled end tries to pull back the receiver, and it kind of bounces a little bit. That's pretty much a dead giveaway. Granted, I couldn't find any strings, but it's pretty easy to do stuff like that. And my goodness, the towel. Did you not see it move just prior to him stepping backward and out of the scene? Which is key critical, because anything and everything that moved in that video, Ramirez was moving in that direction, away from the object. Well, same thing happened with the hanger. I mean, what was the hanger doing there anyway? Kind of weird. It happened again with the phone as he stood in the doorway. This honestly isn't very convincing in my book. I mean, a lot of people have mentioned the scissors on the refrigerator. Pretty obvious. Maybe he was cutting fishing line. And Ramirez purportedly not only knows the owner of the motel, but he stays there very frequently. So I don't know. Maybe he's trying to give him business. Ramirez even shot a debunking video, which I didn't even watch. Didn't bother. I mean, didn't bother. He made deliberate attempts to show the string in a different room with better lighting, which is critical here. That's why you don't see the string. The lighting is pretty low. The camera is pretty far away. All those little things, they add up and they kind of give you the illusion that what you're seeing is magical, but it's really fishing line. And I also agree with Kenny Biddle when he says Ramirez probably meant this as a joke, but now with over 9.6 million views, with over 100,000 shares, I say it's gotten a little bit out of hand. And I think it's forced him to stick with the story. He might have come clean if it hadn't gone viral. And lastly, it should be noted that if you kind of poked around, and I'm sure some people like to poke around other people's Facebook pages, Ramirez references fishing numerous times on his Facebook page. So I'm sure he's got that stuff readily at hand. And speaking of Facebook, I made a comment. Somebody had mentioned this story, and I made a comment, and I want to read what I wrote here. And I mean this. I said, sadly, making, viewing, commenting, and arguing over fake videos has long surpassed any true anomalous research. And I stand by that. We're so focused on whether it's right, whether it's wrong, and having to debunk these videos. But, you know, what's really going on with this stuff? Why can't we just focus on helping people through these situations? If it's true that something's in the hotel, fine, film it, get a group in there, but don't make claims that it was definitely a poltergeist, which is funny, by the way. If you really know what a poltergeist by the leading hypothesis is, it's kind of befitting that he claims that they poltergeist, because a poltergeist by common knowledge and common definition through parapsychologists is that it's created by human behavior. It's an outlet for stress. It's living people or moving objects. So it's very ironic that he would call it a poltergeist. Anyway, that's that. And let me put that link in the chat room as well, so you guys can see Kenny Biddle's take. Also, Kenny Biddle does a kind of a remake of that original video. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty convincing. Doesn't take much to do this. And how many times have you seen these videos online about door slamming and stuff? It's really not that hard to do. I tell you, it's not hard to do either, is if you find a fulcrum point and you pull off to the side so people don't see the string, you can actually make objects move away from you. I don't want to give too much information, but that's a little bit more convincing than every single object, a towel, a phone, and a hanger coming directly at you at the same exact angle where your arm is. It's not very convincing. But yeah, there are ways to make objects move in different directions. I won't give all that information away. Other news. This is really, really weird. Now, in 1991, Doug Bauer and Dave Chorley revealed to the world that they were responsible for crop circles in most of England over the prior decade. Well, this news did not stop many seriologists, and seriologist is a name for people who study crop circles, from continuing their work or coming up with alternative explanations for crop circles. While many are quick to blame aliens or UFOs, a recent reveal might just top them all. A man named Roland Beljon recently made a public announcement at the 27th Glastonbury Symposium, a paranormal conference geared toward all things strange. As the chairman of the Dutch Center for Crop Circle Studies and a self-proclaimed researcher of crop circles for 23 years, Beljon knows exactly how crop circles are formed, and he made a big announcement about it. And nope, it's not aliens. Roland and some of his colleagues claim to have created crop circles not by planks of wood, but with their minds. Their minds. They thought about it, and it happened. Roland was quoted as saying, quote, "I was sitting with seven people in the pub, and we talked about how some people had created crop circles by thoughts, and we decided, let's try that," unquote. And this is ironic, too, because Doug and Dave of the crop circle fame created their thought and idea of manufacturing crop circles while also at a pub sliming some pints. Now, the group of eight purportedly focused on an image of a design on the wall of a church. Well, their plan for the circle appearing across the street did not happen immediately. The group began their mass meditation attempt at the Black Horse Pub at Share Hill. 2 days later, a crop circle that Beljon states is the image they were concentrating on appeared 15 miles away from the pub. Beljon claims that he has done this trick before, back in 2009, with a Japanese skeptic who was turned into an instant believer after this purported co-creation of a crop circle. So my big question here is, why did Beljon wait 8 years to reproduce this experiment if it was so successful the first time around? I don't know. Thought, I mean, the powers of thinking, the powers of thought, yes, very strong. But to create a crop circle from that, not so sure about that. Not so sure about that. So that's it for other news as well. So I want to talk quickly here about the Black Panther program that I talked about at the fifth Strange Encounters event. Also the book of the week, which tie in together. I mentioned, great book. It's a very sad book, but very educational book if you're into the topic. But Black Panthers, why did I talk about Black Panthers? What does that have to do with anything, especially paranormal? Well, first of all, there's a lot of folklore behind Black Panthers. And a lot of that comes from Cherokee folklore here in the eastern United States. A creature called the Wampus Beast or Wampus Cat is a very heavy part of Cherokee folklore. There's two different stories, two different versions of this. One states that a wife of a Cherokee warrior was spying on her husband and their meetings that they have about whatever the warriors talk about. And she dressed herself up with a skin of a cat and hid behind a rock to spy. And she was caught, and her punishment was being turned into this cat. And so now she forevermore wanders the woods, wailing as this black cat, this black beast. I don't buy that one. A couple of reasons. First and foremost, if she dressed up like a cat and was sneaking up on hunters, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't turn out very well for her. And I don't think she'd be that naive to think she could get away with that. But the second is that there's a little bit more of a more credible story from Cherokee folklore, although it's very loosely based and it's very hard to find the actual origins of this story. And it centers on a Indian woman. Her name was Running Deer. And Running Deer was the husband of a warrior who was out in the woods looking for this demon that exists out in the woods called Iwa. And Iwa was able to turn anybody I used the when I did this presentation, I said mashed potatoes. I don't know, it was the first thing that came to my mind. It could turn a person's mind into mashed potatoes, not literally, of course, but figuratively. And that's what happened with Running Deer's husband. She was so distraught about this that he wasn't dead, but he was pretty much useless to the tribe. She got very upset, and she decided to go out and hunt for Iwa herself. She put on a mask of a black cat and went out and was able to surprise the Iwa, because if the Iwa sees you first, mashed potatoes. But she saw the Iwa first and defeated the Iwa. So it's said that her spirit, the spirit of Running Deer with this mask, is now this wampus beast or wampus cat that exists out in the wild. But it's interesting that they would have a black cat. We'll talk about that here in a second. There's also the Ozark Howler, the black howler or devil cat that's known to exist out in the Ozark Mountains, and that's Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and even parts of Texas that this has been described. And Texas is, even Oklahoma, very big hotbeds for Black Panther sightings. Some pop culture stuff. We have Bagheera from The Jungle Book. The Jungle Book was written way back in 1894. I'm pretty sure that Dita might have gotten her one of the first copies of that. And Bagheera is a black panther. The story was set in India, and there's been numerous movie adaptations since all that. And of course, comics. Black Panther. I know it's not an actual Black Panther, but I'm excited about this. Black Panther made its debut 1966 and is now part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the movie Black Panther coming out in March of 2018. Excited about that. And also in sports, the Carolina Panthers, NFL football team based on the East Coast, uses a logo. It's a black cat. It's got little blue outlines. I'm not sure why, but it's a black cat. And I've always found that interesting when they did that. Why do they do that? So to explain what a Black Panther is, first let me say that there are four, well, let's just say, of the four biggest cats of the world, the tiger is, there's many subspecies of each one of these, but as a whole, the largest species is the tiger. I know people are like, wait, it's got to be the lion, right? King of the jungle? Well, first of all, lions don't live in the jungle. Lions come in second in size and weight. The jaguar and puma. It depends on what source you use. Sometimes the puma's third, sometimes the jaguar's third. But nonetheless, those are your top four. And it's amazing when you consider, when you think about large cats, big cats, wild cats, you don't think of the United States. However, two of the top four biggest cats live right here in North America, the jaguar and puma. So where does melanism come into this, or the black, I should say Black Panther? Well, the black coats are caused by a thing called melanism. And melanism is a dark colored pigment, melanin, which occurs in excess in animals that appear black. Now, this is the opposite of albinism. And there are, when you're looking at cats, there are actually eight distinct mutations that scientists have discovered that cause this. And a lot of animals appear melanistic. A lot of squirrels. I know we have, where I live, there's tons of black squirrels. Deer have appeared melanistic. Fox, even penguins, whales, pretty much any animal with a decent amount of black in them can appear melanistic. The same as albinos. It happens in nature quite a bit more than melanism. At least we notice it more because it's scary odd. Now, for felines, for cats, melanism is actually an adaptive thing. They usually use this. It occurs pretty much all the time in heavily canopied areas. So a forest with a heavy canopy that covers the sky. So the understory is darker where the cats are running around. And that's to help it adapt to be able to sneak up on prey. So it doesn't really happen in open areas, wide open areas, such as the out west or in the plains of Africa. Not going to happen. Now, abundism, I'll mention this real fast. Abundism is partial black covering. It's not true melanism. So you might see an animal with a lot of black, but still some other colors. That's not melanism. It's abundism. So black cats, where does black cats fit in all this? And why is that considered paranormal? Well, there are two cats that are considered Black Panthers. And when you use the term Black Panther, panther refers to Panthera, the genus Panthera, which includes lions, tigers, leopards, and jaguars. Those are the four Panthera creatures. Now, the only two out of those four that can appear melanistic are leopards and jaguars. And leopards live in Africa and Asia. And melanism in leopards occurs most commonly in southwestern China, Bhutan, India, and Myanmar. So that's in the heavily forested jungle areas. And with the jaguar, this occurs, melanism actually only occurs in 6% frequency. So a majority of the time when you're seeing a black panther in the zoo, it's usually a leopard. And jaguars, yes, they do exist in North America. They have been seen in Arizona. El Jefe, I think is the name of the one jaguar. Now, he's just a normal-looking jaguar. He's not black. I should say melanistic. I would say he's not black, but it's not melanistic. Now, a majority, actually pretty much every single melanistic jaguar ever seen has happened in South America or parts of Central America, but south of Mexico. Mexico is considered North America. But there's a line. There's a place called the Isthmus of Tehuantepec. And it's a little narrowing of land. It's kind of, if you follow the Yucatan Peninsula across where Mexico is, it kind of squeezes itself a little bit. It's not quite as narrow as the Panama Canal, but the Isthmus of Tehuantepec is about 143 miles wide. And it's this area where the regions change. To the west is dry, hilly, very, very temperate. Now to the west is very thick with jungle, very wet. And that's where, south of there and in South America, is where these essentially melanistic jaguars or black panthers occur. So when you're saying black panther, you're only talking about leopards and jaguars. Now, there's a lot of other melanistic cats in the world. Bobcats have actually been seen melanistic, very rare, only 12 in the world. There's like, I think 13 cats, including Felis catus. Yes, your house cat can appear melanistic as well, considered a wild cat. Let's see. But what about the cougar? And a lot of people think, well, black panthers include the cougar or mountain lion, puma, catamount, whatever you want to call it, lots of different names. Well, no, the cougar, mountain lion, it's a puma, puma con color. And puma con color means cat of one color, essentially. They're not part of the Panthera species at all, or genus. So they're not really considered part of the whole Black Panther blanket of animals. Even though a lot of people report seeing these and thinking that it's a cougar, mountain lion, a lot of people get upset when I say this because they're pretty sure that that's what they saw and they appear black. Well, yes, at certain angles, cougars will appear very dark. They do have some black hair in their fur. If you see them up close, they look, again, cat of one color. They look like they're tawny brown, light brown, tannish, all the way down to a dark brown, but they do not ever appear melanistic, much to the excitement of some people out there. They don't appear black. It's they're beautiful creatures the way they are. Don't try to change them. But at an angle, sometimes if the sun is hitting it just right, they do appear very dark, black. And that's what Mother Nature had intended for these catch to blend in with their surroundings. That's their ambush predators. And that's what they're designed for, is to sneak and to pop up and scare people. And that's been happening a lot lately. If you pay any attention to cougars or mountain lions, there's a lot of stuff going on from the Black Hills of South Dakota to California, Northern California, Southern California, Utah. Salt Lake City right now is dealing with some problems with mountain lions, or perceived problems, I should say, with mountain lions. It's just their kind of attitude on the whole thing. And one amazing cat here, and the other reason why, now obviously I've explained why black panthers are kind of fitted with cryptozoology, but mountain lions are also kind of thought to be also paranormal, because they were supposedly, here in the East, there was a distinct species called the Eastern Cougar, which was last seen back in 1938 when a hunter dispatched one in Maine. And the you ever see that famous picture? It's a famous picture with the hunter standing there with the – or a guy standing there with the mountain lion from 1938. That's not the hunter. That's a different person, by the way. Anyway, Eastern Cougar is supposed to be extinct, but there are sightings all the time in the Eastern East Coast. I know here in Ohio we've had plenty of sightings over the course of the early to mid 2000s into here in the teens. I haven't heard any, probably about 2 or 3 years, but there's been numerous sightings out east, and also up in Canada, Ontario area, of large cougars, big cats, definitely not house cats, which sometimes, yes, they do get misinterpreted for. But an amazing story took place back in 2011. And again, 2011 is when the Eastern Cougar was deemed extinct, March 2nd, 2011. Now, 3 years later, 2015, it was taken off the endangered species list and declared officially extinct. However, there's been a number of sightings. In 2011, a sad event took place where a cat, on June 11th, 2011, a mountain lion was struck and killed by an SUV on the Wilbur Cross Parkway in Medford, Connecticut, which is about 65 miles north of New York City. How did it get there? That's 1,500 plus miles. Well, that journey of this cat is probably one of the most famous crossings of an animal in history, because 1,500 miles, this cat has gone 4 times farther than any other cat ever documented. And they're documenting these cats very heavily. Now, the cat was DNA-wise was found to come from the Black Hills area of South Dakota from its DNA. And it was seen numerous times, Minnesota, Wisconsin. It was seen numerous times, documented by police, seen on trail cams. All sorts of incidents followed this particular individual cat all across the country, and they figured this out through DNA. They've been able to trace this journey, this incredible journey of this poor cat that ended up dying on a road. Very sad. And that's chronicled in this book, which is the book of the week this week. Very, very, very good book. If you're into big cat research, especially, or I should say specifically with the mountain lion, this is by far one of the best books I've ever read on the mountain lion history here in North America. Wasn't really expecting a whole lot, because I figured it was centered on this whole story. But it does talk about a lot of the political problems dealing with mountain lions, and it's sad because it's still happening now. This book did come out last year on April 12th of 2016, but the problems are still happening with mountain lions. South Dakota is just annihilating all of their mountain lions. They're just killing them at will. They're actually paying people to kill these mountain lions, and that's why we're not seeing too many occurring out here out in the East anymore, because they're killing all their mountain lions, any one of them that travels. All the states in the path are also killing these mountain lions. It's really disturbing. It's really sad, because this large cat, yes, it's an ambush predator, Yes, it's attacked people. Yes, it's killed people. But I read a story that said that toothbrushes kill more people annually than mountain lions. Yeah, they don't really kill hardly anybody. It's very, very rare. And it usually happens when people are jogging or children are present. And they're not paying attention or the parents are not around. 90% of these cases were children that were out with without parental guidance, essentially out in the woods, not in the backyard, not on the swing set, but out in the woods. So we have to respect the mountain lion capable of doing, but they're also just cats. They're just cats. And they're wild animals, but if you allow wild animals to be wild animals, they'll do their part and they'll leave you alone. So the book of the week, yeah, stop brushing your teeth. They'll kill you. It's crazy. The book of the week this week was written by William Stolzenberg and is titled Heart of a Lion, A Lone Cat's Walk Across America. And I'll put the link in there. I also have the cover. The cover is beautiful. This cat in here. Heart of a Lion. It is an interesting read, but it's very painful because you know how the story ends. The cat's gonna die, and it's really eye opening to read about the political problems, the political history of dealing with the mountain lion, and what it's had to endure over the years, and what we've done to this cat, and why it's a remarkable story for it to even have to come back in the first place. But again, if you're into mountain lions, you're curious about mountain lions. Maybe you live in an area where there's been sightings, or you live out here in the East and you're hopeful that maybe they'll come back, or maybe you're in between. I know a lot of people that I see comment on these stories are they're not sure. Again, just like all the other stories I talk about, they take one extreme or the other. Well, mountain lions are good. Let's just leave them alone. Let them be part of nature. The other side, no, these are man-killing beasts. They're the third largest cat in the world. They're ambush predators. They can crush a human skull. No, let's kill them all off. And you know what? The truth is in the middle. It's amazing when you read this book and you really fully understand that if we just leave these cats alone, it's actually much better and will be actually much safer in the long run if we just allow nature to run its course. Amazing. Let nature do its job. I could go on and on about this. I'm very passionate about mountain lions, and it's one of the things that I've focused on with my cryptozoological research and studies. And a lot of people question that. Is it really a cryptid? Well, yes. If the Eastern cougar is extinct, mountain lions shouldn't be out here. And even if they are Western cougars, it's still an interesting story, and they're still not supposed to be here. So, yes, it is a cryptid. That's how I see it. I'm a little bit more of old school with this whole cryptozoology thing. I mean, yeah, flying humanoids, they have their place. It's interesting stuff. But I love my cats. And with that, that was your book of the week. Again, Heart of a Lion by William Stolzenberg. Again, so much information in this book. It is just amazing. Lastly, but not leastly, I want to mention that the Paranormal News Insider and the rest of WCJV Digital Broadcasting shows are available on a WCJV app. So go to the App Store, go to Google Play, download the app, listen in live, chat in the chat room. It's good stuff. And WCJV can also be found on iHeartRadio, iTunes, and is also available through SoundCloud, MixCloud, YouTube, and a lot of other places. Probably your favorite one. And if it's not, let them know. Let us know. And we'll get you where you want to listen to the show. That being said, I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.